Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Strange Pathways. I am your host, Scott Mort. Where was I last week? I was sick. Absolutely sick as a dog. It was that kind of sick where it was like, you know, coughing and stuffed nose. And I'm sure you can hear it in my voice that I'm still a little bit stuffed up. But it was that kind of weird sick where that fever kicks in and you start hallucinating. And it is interesting to see the way the mind twists and turns. You can't appreciate it in the moment, but looking back on it, I was so out of it, I was having a really difficult time understanding how pie pans worked. Pie pans. The whole concept, oddly enough, just did not make sense to me. And looking back on it, you know, it was obvious that the illness had put some sort of gate on that information where I could just barely understand it, but not really. And it just kind of made me wonder. Hello, Wilfred. It made me wonder a little bit later on, whenever I was feeling better, like what gates exist naturally? What is in place to keep us from getting too intelligent? How can we remove those gates? Is there any gates at all? You know, or is this just the ramblings of a individual getting over an illness? A little something to think about. I will be honest, I have not done any editing to the episode, the special episode, but I do want to throw it out there. If you were part or knew somebody who was part of the Sisters Mary Minor Immaculate cult, please, please reach out, get in touch with me, strangepathwaysmail@gmail.com. On to this week's tales. Our first tale is going to take us all the way back to somewhere in September and October of 1989, San Piero Assive, Florence, Italy. There are two elderly farmers. These farmers declined to give their name to the investigator at the time, but one morning, they're out on their farm, and they're working in the fields. The one farmer looks over, taps the other farmer on the shoulder, and a dark sphere descends over the field, almost silently. They actually described it as like a breath. So really the only sound coming out of this was the sphere rests on the field. And from this sphere came an entity in a black collared jumpsuit. Now, it had long, dark hair, huge red eyes, a la Mothman. And just like the Mothman, the farmers were hit with an unnatural fear, as was their dog. And this creature seemed to be wearing some sort of helmet. Whether the eyes were coming through or these large eyes were some sort of visor, they really couldn't say. But here's the really interesting part. This didn't happen once or twice. This happened four other times, five times in total, and always in the same field. As one is to do, the farmers end up having their own vernacular about this incident. They nickname the creature the Fishman because this creature, it didn't walk, but it just kind of floated in the area. And whenever it had to move, it moved like a fish in the water. Now, they didn't tell a lot of people. They only told a few people about this. One day, one of the old farmers is watching this sphere. The black sphere comes down, and it's coming down in a patch of wheat, and it crushes all of this wheat, ruins it completely. And this farmer gets really, really, really angry. It had just so happened that this farmer was working with a pitchfork at the time. So, I mean, he's walking over to the sphere. He's got the pitchfork in his hand. He's a threat. And that's whenever the flying being fires a beam of light from his eyes. It hits this elderly farmer, and he's unable to move. This farmer is paralyzed completely. His wife sees the entire thing happen, and she screams, "Come back, otherwise this will kill us. Run away." At this point, the being re-enters his craft and leaves. But this time, he does not leave silently. It is loud. The farmers approach. They thought he was having trouble, and they're actually going over to help him. The last thing that they hear before the craft takes off is the being shouting at them, shouting in Italian, "Don't come nearer because it will burn you." Now, when I first read this encounter, my first instinct was to disbelieve it. I don't know why. Just something didn't ring true. But my lovely wife, Ariana, and I, we enjoy this one channel, The Y-Files. And we watched an episode of The Y-Files about the Ariel School incident. I believe we've talked about it here on Strange Pathways. One of the young girls was describing one of the beings. Black hair. The movements were slow, hopping, skipping. Similar to the way one would move around a pool. Moving like a fish. That had my attention. And then a few more of the children started to talk about how prominent the eyes were. And then all of a sudden, between you and me, I don't know if I believe this story, but it certainly made me more inclined to believe it. I believe that the children at the Ariel School saw something. And this something was so similar to what these two elderly farmers have seen. Well, now I gotta believe, because we've got two incidents separated by a certain span of time, about a decade, but they're so very similar. And I'm beginning to believe that wherever this alien came from that visited these two Italian farmers, well, it came from the same place that the entities in the Ariel School were from. I mean, it would kind of make sense. Nobody goes to a place just once. We as humans, we as experiencing creatures of this universe, tend to go to the same places over and over and over. And I imagine it's not much different for them. Our next tale is going to take us all the way back to 1982. The USS San Bernardino. Now, we're going to meet Kevin. Kevin does work in the medical field. And one night, he was working down in his space, catching up on a bit of paperwork. And a friend of his comes down to visit him. And his friend's looking at him. And he tells Kevin, he's been abducted by extraterrestrials ever since he was 8 years old. Well, of course, Kevin takes this with a grain of salt, but he does have a conversation about it. He's known this guy for 4 years. This is the first time this subject has ever come up. It's just a late Sunday night, and he's just like, okay, sure. They're out to sea, West Pacific. They're kind of between Japan, Korea, Singapore, Thailand. They're not anywhere near where they were the other time. They've been out to sea all week. They're not exactly sure exactly where they are. This is a Tuesday night. Kevin's friend comes down. Kevin's doing paperwork once again. And his friends tell him, hey, they came and got me. Kevin kind of humors him, goes, oh, that's nice. You know, we're still out to sea. Where'd they take you? And he tells Kevin, they took me to your house in Kankakee, Illinois. Kevin's like, oh, really? What did you see? The friend starts describing things that he saw. And the more that he's describing, the more upset Kevin is getting, because it's all true. There was some troubling points to this, though. Remember, this is taking place in 1982, but Kevin's friend is telling him about the 1966 Ford Galaxy fire and the fact that it has a chocolate milk stain on the backseat of the car. And he does verify, yes, this 1966 Ford Galaxy, it did have a chocolate milk stain on the back seat. They had gone to Dairy Queen and he'd spilled his milkshake all over it. But Kevin's family had traded the car in 1973. Kevin's friend starts describing the living room furniture. And he's describing the furniture that Kevin had before they got rid of it and gotten new furniture in 1969. He knew the furniture. He knew the car. But it was not the stuff that they had owned in present day 1982. Kevin is getting more and more upset. His friend is telling him so much info, so much detail. The CIA couldn't have that much. Kevin goes, where did you get all this? And he goes, I just came from your house 15 minutes ago. And Kevin just feels that this is true. And he goes, well, how? And his friends go, my friends. Kevin says, if you're telling me the truth, I want to meet your friends. His friend tells him, I don't know for sure. I'll talk to them. I'll let you know. A couple of days later, Kevin's friend comes down and goes, yeah, I talked to him. You can meet them. Kevin's a little surprised. He goes, really? When? Well, you'll find out. The next day, Kevin's friend comes down and goes, they're here. up on the main deck. Kevin and his friend go from Kevin's little medical space up to the main deck, and Kevin sees the star. It was the most beautiful thing he's ever seen in his life, shining every single color of the rainbow, all the way through it, all around it. Kevin even thinks to himself, this could be the Star of Bethlehem. It was beautiful. It's as bright as the sun, but it's not hurting Kevin's eyes. Two guys were standing in front of Kevin and his friend. They were having a conversation. He was trying to get their attention. He's looking at this craft. He figures it's about 30, 35,000 feet up, about where an airliner would fly. It's about 3.5 miles wide, 2.5 miles tall. You'd have to be blind not to see it, but these two guys are having this conversation, and they're just not even responding. There's 240 people on this deck. This is at 11:30 in the morning. But Kevin and his friend just see the two. They never respond to Kevin. Kevin has a death grip on the dude, shaking him as hard as he can, and the dude's not even budging. Kevin blinks, and now he's on the ship. He's looking down. He can see the craft that he was on. The ship does a flyby. And his thought is, my God, this can't be happening. And as soon as he thinks that, a voice comes into his head and says, yes, it is, Kevin. This is what you wanted. And then it hits Kevin, that military mind. He goes, I'm AWOL. Another voice comes into his head. They don't even know that you're gone. They take him to the future. They take him to the past, but they all do it telepathically. He sees himself walking out of his house, talking to his grandmother that died in 1972. They show him Armageddon-type things. Things that he didn't want to know. Things that he still doesn't want to know. The last thing he sees is he's riding a motorcycle and he gets hit broadside by a car and he's lying next to his bike. Kevin is convinced they just showed him how he's going to die. In 2003, that accident happened. Kevin was in a coma for 15 days. For 21 years, Kevin thought he knew how he was going to die. But he didn't. He did not die. And maybe right there's the message. That this can all be stopped. The Armageddon, everything they showed him that hasn't happened yet, can be stopped. When all this telepathic time travel ended, Kevin realizes he's standing on a metal grate, battleship gray in color. Kevin was with them for about 40 minutes before he finally got to look at them. He looks at them and he goes, are you going to eat me? And they tell them, you watch too many horror films. They were 12 to 15 feet tall. That's what he remembers. They weren't little. And they weren't green. They were 12 to 15 feet tall. Whenever Kevin comes back, he's lying on his rack. He sits up in his bed. and his uniform is just soaked with sweat. He's hyperventilating. And he's thinking to himself, oh God, this has just been a dream. He turns to get out of his bed, and his friend is just standing there. And he goes, tell me about your ride, Kevin. Kevin never talked to his friend after that. He avoided him as much as he could because Kevin is fairly certain his friend isn't human. Kevin's sure his friend is one of them. Our last tale is going to take us back to July 1st, 1979, Sangonera La Verda, Murcia, Spain. I am absolutely afraid I'm going to murder these names, but I will do my best. There are four young men, Antonio Guerrero Carrillo, 16, his cousin Jose Carrillo, 14, and their friends Ginés Jiménez Arau and Jesús, both 17 years old. They're traveling on a local dirt road on their motorbikes. They're kind of looking around for turtle nests in the Puerto Valley. They get to this area known as Fuente del Perro. And about 3 kilometers away, they see a strange light. It's a big light. It's strong. Stronger than a normal flashlight. And it was going in these weird circular clockwise movements. Now this light was white, but it glowed yellow inside. But when it moved, the streaks it left behind were multicolored. There was no sound to this. These four young men, they turn a corner. Their headlights on the motorbike point in the direction of these lights. A height known as the Cabezo Calareo. And as they point their headlights at this light, a light hits them back, a strong yellow light, similar to the lights of an automobile. They leave, but about an hour later, they hear these tree branches breaking. And they see a humanoid figure, 2 to 2.5 meters in height, very human in appearance, and it's only about 8 meters away from them. Now this entity, it walked normally, it walked towards them, but as soon as he noticed the four boys, this entity stopped. It hung its arms at its sides. They weren't really able to make out any hands or feet. It did wear a sort of white jacket. It was slightly luminous. A large pocket on both sides of the chest. A zipper in the center of the jacket. Tight-fitting black pants. And its head was covered with a helmet worn by motorcyclists, but it was an odd-looking helmet. It was quadrangular, oblong in shape, smoked glass visor, and this entity was completely silent. Two of the boys run. And they're bolting from this scares the other two boys. And then that humanoid gives chase. All four boys jump on their motorbikes. They did not stop until they arrived at a city. even though one of them had a flat tire. These three boys, state of anxiety. Some people in the city went outside and they saw a bright light rising from the top of Cabezo Calero. It gets up fairly high in the sky, performs a 90-degree turn, and disappears while going in the direction of Cartagena. They send a party of men up into those hills. And these men find nothing. But the dogs they took with them, very, very excitable. Days after this incident, newspaper reporters found at the summit of Cabezo Calero two very, very deep footprints. 39 and a half centimeters long, 14 centimeters wide. Something big was there. Thank you for joining us here on Strange Pathways. If you are having mental health trouble dealing with a paranormal incident, please reach out to the Opus Network, www.opusnetwork.org. Our Twitter is Pathways Strange. TikTok and Instagram, Strange Pathways Podcast. Our Facebook group will have a couple of images up there dealing with the cases we talked about today. And please feel free to email me just to say hi. If you have something you want to talk about, if you have something that you want me to talk about, especially if you were a member or know of a member of the Sisters Minor of Mary Immaculate cult, please, please reach out. StrangePathwaysMail@gmail.com. Thank you once again for joining us this week. Hopefully I'll be back again next week. Fingers crossed. Take care of yourselves and each other.